Hello and welcome to The Lens with me, Sarah Travers. The Lens is a business in the community podcast in partnership with One Young World. Well, I'm delighted to introduce our guests today. They are Roisin Currie, who is the CEO of Greggs, which needs no introduction, and indeed to Jessica Garbutt, who is the senior manager within the workforce consulting team at PwC. Now, in this episode, we'll be exploring how putting business at the heart of communities is essential for everyone. We'll also be discussing some of the tough issues out there, such as employing those who have a criminal conviction. And we'll be finding out how businesses are literally stepping up to the plate to address food poverty. So let's get into the conversation. Roisin, Jess, welcome to The Lens. Let's find out a little bit more about our guests. So Roisin, please tell our listeners firstly about yourself and perhaps how you've come to be in your role and what you do outside of work and your family life too.
Thank you, Sarah. So I am born and bred in Glasgow. I grew up there and then went to university in Glasgow. I went to Strathclyde University and studied business law and human resource management and worked part-time at ASDA while I was doing my degree and then went on to the ASDA graduate programme. Moved around the UK and then left ASDA after 20 years to join Greggs, firstly as the people director, then I took responsibility for retail operations and then property, and then I became the chief executive in 2022. I live in Harrogate in Yorkshire. I have three children, a husband and two dogs, and I try to, if I can, fit in Pilates and running each week.
Roisin, let's just talk a bit about the phenomenon that is Greggs.
So yes, so Greggs, we have 2,473 shops across the UK. We're here to bring great quality, great tasting, freshly prepared food at affordable prices so that everyone can access that sort of food on the go opportunity. We have a wide range of items on our menu, coffee, we've got pizza, we've got sandwiches and salads, and we've got obviously our famous bakes and our donuts and sweet treats.
Everybody has heard of PwC also, Jess, but let's find out a little bit about you and what you do, where you're from and your role within PwC, another business that is so familiar with all of our listeners.
First of all, thanks so much for having me here today. So I work with clients cross-sector on large-scale transformation projects or with a people focus. Some of the typical issues that we're working together to solve include how to attract, engage, develop and retain diverse workforces, whilst also ensuring that businesses have the skills needed for both today and in the future. I'm also passionate about social mobility. I was the founder of PwC's Social Mobility Network, which has over 3,000 members and 160 champions. And going back to the start and where this drive comes from, it's really from my own personal journey and experiences. I grew up in Wakefield, which is an area that typically has lower levels of social mobility in a working class family. And growing up, I wasn't even aware that companies like PwC existed, and let alone had the ambition to work there. I was the first person in my family to go to university, and it was there that I started to hear more about business opportunities. And then fast forward, you know, I made my way to PwC and I found myself reflecting on that journey and recognising that even though it worked out for me, you know, it's not the case for lots of people who are often held back based on their parents' occupation or their postcode, which just didn't feel fair. So the network was a way for me to make a difference. And fortunately, PwC gave me that platform to set it up. Outside of work, I've got a two-year-old daughter called Isabel, which keeps me very busy. And I still very much see myself adapting to life as a working parent.
Well, Jess, that is absolutely fascinating. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your own background. And we're hearing so much more about social mobility. And if I could ask you, Jess, what does that actually mean?
I mean, to me, it's an individual not being held back in terms of the opportunities that they can achieve in life on the basis of their parents' occupation or where they were born. So it's really about having equal opportunities and allowing everyone to reach their potential.
Roisin, if we just talk a little bit about Greggs, and I know place is so important. being a force for good and recognising the importance of looking after and being part of a community is absolutely what Greggs is all about.
Yeah, I feel extremely fortunate because I'm the chief executive of an organisation which at its heart has got doing good, and it's got those really strong foundations. So whenever anyone in the organisation is coming up with new ideas or new opportunities for us, it's always an open door. And it's always that sort of coming together of let's work together and let's do the most amount of good we possibly can as a team. I think what we did try and do a few years ago is because we'd been doing good for so long and we'd various different programs, we brought them all under the umbrella of our Greggs Pledge. And that's really where we sort of set out externally and very publicly the targets that we are going after to really demonstrate and prove and measure the impact that we can have. So we've got a number of commitments. We work with other partners to help us achieve those, and they sort of fall under three broad headlines. So we try to work harder to have stronger, healthier communities. We try to do our bit to have a safer planet. And then we just try to do better business. And within each of those, we've got a number of commitments that we're striving to achieve. One of the programmes that I'm most proud of is our Fresh Start programme. So this was a programme that actually came about because we went on a seeing is believing visit with the ITC to a women's prison up in the northeast. So what we did is as a group of businesses, we came together and we put together a 12-week course, which was called Getting People into the World of Work. So it was really trying to help these women in prison, give them a bit of hope, give them confidence, and really basics, just as how do you dress for an interview? How do you prepare for an interview? And when you're asked the question, you know, where have you been for the last X many years? How do you answer that? Our pledge was simply to do this training course. However, what happened was, as my team turned up week after week after week to do the training course, they met a lot of women within the prison that they actually felt could absolutely be Greggs employees. And when they heard their backstories and the reasons for being in prison, I guess it shatters all those sort of preconceptions that you've got about why someone ends up in prison. And so we then moved from just being part of providing hope, preparation and confidence for these women to actually starting to employ them in the world of work. And we started that through a scheme called Release on Temporary Licence. We did recruitment days, we learned, we understood, and then we started our own Fresh Start programme, which continues today, employs directly from prisons, Rotto's Release on Temporary Licence. So it's where your sentence allows you to come out of prison each morning, go and do a job and come back to prison in the evening. And actually, while that really worried me at the start, it is actually the safest way to help people form a new habit before the release, because it doesn't put them back into the community where maybe the temptation and day-to-day issues and force them to maybe make the wrong decisions. So we had a lovely lady called Leanne. Myself and two of my colleagues used to go to the prison every morning, collect her. We took her to her bakery, and then every evening we picked her back up and we took her back to prison. And by the end of the 3 weeks, when I went along to actually say to sort of Leanne a bit of a presentation of certificate, massive thank you. I think what was then the sort of best accolade ever for Leanne was the bakery team said to me, can we not keep Leanne? Because she had just really, she'd integrated so well. She had three children. They were in care. It became a real success story for us because when she did get released, she was able to actually come and work for us. Those family bonds were reunited. And it was that sort of really compelling moment for me and my team around when you give one person this opportunity and you give them the chance to rectify a previous mistake for whatever reason. You don't just impact them, you impact their family, you impact the wider community, where they live, where they work, and you really do reduce that cycle of reoffending. So we're really proud of the Fresh Start programme. And it does link actually to sort of Jess's piece about social mobility, because a number of people that have come through our Fresh Start programme, while they may start with us as team members, there are a number of them that have gone on to supervisory positions or shop management positions. So again, it's not just about getting them that new habit when they come out of prison. It's actually showing them there is a different career for them there, giving them back their pride and their hope and their motivation for the future.
That's amazing. I'd love to ask you a little bit more because I know Greg's roots is in the northeast of England, in Newcastle, and you do such great work in that area. But tell us about the breakfast clubs that you have as well.
So again, breakfast clubs, another seeing is believing visit inspired us there in the sort of 90s. But I mean, I think one of the pieces in breakfast clubs that we're really proud of is that every single school day, we feed 54,000 primary school children across the UK. And we do that alongside our partners. And these would be children that would otherwise turn up at school hungry. And therefore, their ability to learn and concentrate is just not there because, you know, they will sit through the morning simply feeling hungry until they get the free school meal. So therefore, giving them that, you know, wholesome breakfast to allow them not to worry about being hungry, but really to focus on the learning opportunity. And those schools are all across the UK and Northern Ireland. And actually, we all try and adopt a breakfast club. And I always say, the best start to any day is the day that I've got a breakfast club visit in my diary, because you sit there with the kids, you read with them, you eat toast with them, you have some yogurt and fruit juice with them, you play some games with them. And it just reminds you how much this is needed and how we all need to do a little bit more. But you also have a bit of fun before your workday starts, which is fantastic.
Jess, if I could bring you in now, I could see you listening. And it makes me, just listening to this, just check those biases, check those perceptions. And this is what we need to do as businesses. You've talked already about your huge interest in social mobility, Jess. One of the things you're passionate about is upskilling or reskilling local communities with the skills needed in the future, and particularly with the onset of AI. So I wonder, would you be able to share with us some of PwC's stats around the need, first of all, and then more specifically, what exactly PwC is doing in this space to address this?
Just before I get started, also to say that the stories you shared, Roisin, were extremely powerful, actually. And I think it just shows how moving it is to hear those personal stories and inspiring for all of us. So just to share some of our research, really to set the scene on why skills is an important area where business should support communities. So at PwC, we recently completed a global workforce survey called Hopes and Fears. This detailed the attitudes and behaviours of nearly 54,000 workers worldwide. And amongst other things, of course, there are themes there around the cost of living crisis, which is really affecting people at the moment. But it also showed that 77% of business leaders stated that they were investing in advanced technologies such as AI, with 78% of workers believing that their roles will be impacted by AI. I think what this means is that jobs and skills needed for the future of work are dramatically changing. We already know that educational inequalities are a significant factor in low social mobility. And if businesses who are creating the demand and opportunities for work don't support local communities, we could see the inequalities grow even bigger today, which is obviously something that none of us wants. I know it's about doing the right thing, but I do think there's a strong business case for responsible business too. People want to work for employers that care, you know, same for consumers and shareholders. You know, they want organisations that do live up to their purpose and values. And one of our other recent pieces of research showed that 86% of employees prefer to support or work for companies that care about the same issues that they do. And I think that's really compelling, especially considering, you know, the demand for workers at the moment. Just to share some of the examples of what we've done at PwC, you know, as a professional services firm, we do recognise the impact that skills-based volunteering can have. And we aim for 50% of all our volunteering with communities to be skills-focused. We give all of our people 6 days per year within their working hours to volunteer. To call out one of our key programmes in the skills space, it's called new world, new skills. And in this programme, we work with school students from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and other disadvantaged groups, actually, such as refugees, to equip them with the skills needed to fulfil their potential. And just to kind of share some stats around that so you can see the impact that it's having. I think to date, since we started, you know, we've reached over 17,000 students. And last year alone combined, there was around 5,000 secondary school students that we reached through our programmes, which are focused around, you know, developing essential skills for employment, but also some of the technical skills that are in demand at the moment, such as technology and data. We also have a paid work experience programme that's specifically ring-fenced for those from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and we started to do some pilots with primary schools. I think, Sarah, you mentioned it earlier, actually, the importance of thinking about location and place. And this is something that we seek to think about and be mindful of with our engagement with communities. So we do look to provide opportunities to some of the most disadvantaged communities, such as the social mobility cold spots. These are typically areas that would be harder for a business like ours to reach, but we put a lot of effort into providing opportunities for those communities. These are just like a few examples of what we do in the skills space, but we also work with charity partners, support social enterprises, and we even run an annual pantomime for kids from social mobility backgrounds, and that's completely run and with a PwC staff cast, which is always quite exciting to see who the budding actors are within the team.
That's incredible. I love it. Tell me a little bit more about the cold spots. Where exactly are these? And you talk there about, you know, how does PwC know that it's reaching these when you're so vast as well and you're spread across all of the UK and further afield? How do you make sure that personally you know exactly what's going on the ground?
In terms of the cold spots themselves, actually, there's a really good report that the Social Mobility Commission published, which actually details the areas with the lowest level of social mobility in the UK. So I definitely recommend to anyone who's thinking of looking at those to take a look at that paper, because it's really compelling. And it tends to be like coastal towns, like more rural parts of the UK, whereas around like cities, for example, like deprived areas in London, you tend to see they get access to like more opportunities just because there's more businesses based there. I mentioned earlier that the network's comprised of a number of champions. So we've got 160 social mobility champions within our network, and their role is to drive social mobility, whether it's recruiting volunteers, advocating and raising awareness to their teams and externally. And they're really the key connection point, so I can connect with them and hear, you know, what's going on the ground. You know, we also try to measure success as well. But I think just hearing personal stories as well, right? I think that's an important part of the community, is to listen and get out and take part in the volunteering opportunities myself and see the impact that they're having. Sometimes it is the little things. Like I went to a session previously and it was one that was focused on interview skills, but I think it was just coming into the office, actually, having that conversation with professionals and, you know, getting that opportunity for them, which was huge. That's the things I'd say are key, just listening, leveraging the power of your people and workforce, actually.
Really interesting, Jess, and a huge focus for business in the community too, as they have set a big goal of working in 50 of the most deprived places across the UK and helping business find effective ways to collaborate with communities within the places or communities. And with such a global brand as PwC, what response do you get when you go maybe to the cold spots or into certain places? Do they feel that PwC is something that relates to them, that they could perhaps work for, that they could do something with? But in terms of social mobility, you know, what can you offer in terms of recruitment and getting people and upskilling people?
I'd say like not always necessarily at the start when we're first engaging with them, but I think after they've come and spent a day with us or got to meet and hear from our people, then I think definitely, you know, they can see it as a place to work. And that's why I think it's important to share stories actually from the workforce, like get people out there talking to them that come from similar backgrounds, and then they can see themselves working there as well.
How do you both keep it real, so to speak? How do you cope with holding such, you know, high profile positions and just getting on and doing better yourself personally in the world? Roisin.
So it's funny, I was with my mum over Christmas, and I guess I grew up in the east end of Glasgow, it's quite a rough part. And she was talking to someone and she actually said, yeah, but she'll never forget where she came from and where she grew up. I think when you've got that sort of background, that does really help. I am very fortunate because every week I've got the opportunity to go out and spend time in our shops and in our bakeries, chatting to people, finding out what's happening for them. Our teams are amazing. Yes, I am the chief executive, but there's no structure in Greggs. If I turn up at a shop and there is an issue, the team will tell me what the issue is and they'll point out where we're getting it wrong and where they need help, which is just fantastic. So I guess that gives you sort of real feedback. I think when you're out in a breakfast club and just sitting with those kids and hearing what they're asking you, what they're saying, and you know, a lot of the time they maybe come from third generation unemployed families, so they actually say to you, you go to work every day, what's that like? And you know, it's something that they are not used to. And therefore, you can sort of explain and talk and chat about what the workplace is like. And, you know, a bit like Jess, we'll bring schools in, we'll let them at visits, just trying to break down barriers. I also chair the Employers Forum for Reducing Reoffending. So that's where it's a voluntary forum. Number of businesses are on that forum. We work with the Ministry of Justice and New Futures Network, and we just try and encourage and enthuse more businesses to actually come and visit prisons and then considering employment as part of trying to break the cycle of reoffending and improve the communities. So again, when you're chatting with a group of like-minded people, you just find out what their issues are, what's happening with them. And so, I think that just helps. Your knowledge goes further. If you go on a seeing is believing visit, I think that is a fantastic way to get to the heart of an issue that maybe wasn't an issue high on your agenda, but in someone else's world, it's, you know, it's the focus for them.
I love that title, The Seeing is Believing, because if you just pin back your ears and open your eyes and listen and take it in instead of all the perceptions that you might have, it absolutely, you really learn and change as well, which is so important. Jess, how do you keep it real then?
I completely agree with everything that Roisin just said. So I first of all, just like staying connected because of my role doing the social mobility network within PwC, I tend to get a lot of people reaching out to me from similar backgrounds and also connect with, you know, a lot of other people from other businesses that have similar background to myself. So I think that helps for one, just getting out, volunteering, just staying connected really to communities and not forgetting where you're from, right?
Absolutely. And Jess, if for business leaders listening to this, what tips or advice would you give them to be aware of what's happening in the world right now, and especially when it comes to recruiting staff, when it comes to social mobility, and I suppose with AI, and you know, are we going to be looking at some people perhaps losing jobs that are in jobs at the minute? What advice would you give to companies, to leaders now, to be thinking ahead and addressing these issues?
I think some of the points that you just mentioned are really key, like looking ahead for the next like 3 to 5 years around, you know, what does your business need in terms of skills and talent, having a clear view of that. And then on the back of it, that's how you can think about how you maybe support your workforce to develop those skills and support communities with those skills as well. Like you can only really do that if you yourself have the foresight to know what's coming. The point that you mentioned around cost of living and redundancies, that's like very real at the minute. Like the pressure is all around just making sure that they're doing that and approaching that in a fair way that's aligned to their purpose as organisations. So are you just making X number of people redundant, or are you doing it in a way that maybe sets them up for success where they go next, for example? There's ways to do that. You might provide access to skills training or CV support for the next job, for example. But companies that don't do that, if I'm honest, are at risk of being the next company in the news. So I think just really like looking ahead, just taking that like fairness and purpose lens into all like the key decisions that they're making.
Would you agree with that, Roisin?
Yeah, completely, Sarah. I mean, I think the learning that we've all got, and it's been amplified more since the pandemic, is that uncertainty and complexity is now the world that we live in. So I think, you know, to Jess's point, trying to look at what are the trends over the next 3 to 5 years. I saw a quote recently that said, risk factors are those the risks because you haven't thought about them. And as a team, I know we do a lot of work around really trying to think about those risks in the future. And sometimes when you think about them, it's almost the risks that sound most bizarre or that are the ones that you need to plan for. Pandemic's a great example of that. I bet you in 2015-16, you know, any businesses that had a pandemic in the risk map, the person in the room that said it, there would have been eyes rolling, I am sure. And then it comes to pass. So I think it is that piece about trying to spot what you don't think is going to happen and then make sure it's in your planning assumptions. And what I would say is I do think that as business leaders, involving our people is critical. I think sometimes we think the further up the organisation we've got, the more it's incumbent on us to spot those trends. And actually, you cannot beat speaking to people that are the coalface doing the jobs day in, day out, because they're usually the ones that have got a real read on what's happening. And then they'll ask you some questions that really prompt you to think, gosh, is this something we should now be thinking about, worrying about? So yeah, I think we've all got amazing people that work in our businesses. So, and I sometimes think we don't always use them to full potential. So that's something I think I certainly work harder at, is trying to make sure that I do really listen to our people.
Yeah, great advice. Absolutely. Now, at this point, I'd love to know if you have any questions you'd like to ask each other. So, Roisin, would you like to ask Jess a question?
Yes, I have to. It's been fascinating listening to you, Jess. There's probably loads of questions that I could ask. The one that really stood out for me, I really think this whole word connectivity is so, so important for us. And when you're talking about it with the angle of social mobility and you're talking about technology, I'd love to try and understand from your perspective, what do you think we could be doing in primary schools, especially I'm thinking about our breakfast clubs in particular, that are in deprived areas that these kids probably don't have access to tech. It's probably not a conversation that takes place in their households. What do you think we could be doing to try and bring it to primary schools to just almost give those kids the hunger and the thirst for understanding technology so they could be the sort of real talent of the future?
I think that's a really good question, actually. And a lot of social mobility programmes are actually more targeted in secondary schools. So it does seem to be a bit of a gap. And that's actually an area that we're experimenting in at the moment at PwC, is in how can we support primary schools more from a skills perspective. And I think it's like using some of the same approaches that you do for the secondary schools, right? So just increasing awareness of opportunities, maybe providing access to upskilling at an age appropriate level, maybe hearing from, you know, inspirational leaders such as yourself, what you've done, hearing from technology, for example. You mentioned tech. There's a big thing there, for example, around raising aspirations in that space. So maybe they hear stories from different careers in that space at a younger age. But I do think that's a really good point. One thing I thought was just a really practical example, but I remember in COVID-19, a number of businesses actually done their old IT equipment to schools. And I'm not sure if that's still going on as much more, but I thought that was a really good initiative.
Jess, would you like to ask Roisin a question?
I also would have loads of questions to ask you, but one thing I'm particularly interested about, just because it's quite topical at the moment, is I've seen in the news, of course, that you're opening a lot of new branches, which is really exciting. And I think in itself, right, is good for communities. So I was just wondering, how are you using that opportunity to, you know, continue to do work in this area?
Thank you, Jess. So I think, you know, each year we sort of say that we'll open somewhere between 140 to 160 shops, and they'll be in a sort of broad range of locations. So within our portfolio of shops, we also have something called an outlet shop. And that is, so we currently have 36 of those. We have an ambition to have 50 within the next few years. And they are shops where actually they're in communities that probably couldn't even afford to come to a normal Greg shop just because of the level of deprivation. And it's the products that we don't sell the day before that we send to those shops, but we sell them at significantly reduced prices. So yeah, a good example is you can get a lunch baguette for just over £1. So again, it really gives people access to quality products. So I was in one recently, actually, just in Leeds, and there was a lady there. It was 8:15 in the morning. She was buying 3 lunch baguettes, and that was her kids' packed lunch. And she was saying she couldn't make the packed lunch at home as cheaply as she could buy it from that shop. So doing more around getting good quality food to those that most need it is certainly a key ambition. And I think what's lovely about our outlets is a proportion of the profits from each outlet goes to that local community. So we will fund some community organisations locally, and usually they're in the space of food poverty. So they might provide fruit and veg to local families who otherwise couldn't afford them. So it's almost just trying to sort of square that circle. But yeah, the sort of reach of the shops allows us to try and do more.
Now, if you could encourage our listeners to read one piece of research or one report, I think Jess has mentioned one already, that has inspired you to be more responsible, what would it be, Jess?
I'm going to say a book. So it's called The Class Ceiling by Sam Friedman, and it is focused in the social mobility space. After doing like quite a lot of work in this space for a few years now, I've found that like a lot of organisations just don't have the data on their workforces around socioeconomic background, which makes it really hard to like demonstrate the case for change in that space. Whereas I think his work's really good because it actually brings to life the challenge with data and personal stories. So I think that's really powerful. I'm going to be cheeky and just plug the Social Mobility Commission again, because I did mention it earlier, but not only is there lots of great research reports on there, there's also just a lot of practical advice for employers in that space. So just get on that website.
Same question to you then, Roisin.
So I'm going to take a slightly different tack. For me, it's around whenever I read in the press or I hear of a story about a business that is doing something that I think is particularly good, I sort of get on their website and try and read about it and understand it. And I love to see what someone else has done. If they've done it in business and it's worked, then I will steal shamelessly and try and Gregsify and copy that idea, or even connect with them. Because again, you know, back to the word connectivity, I sometimes think that where we can connect as businesses, so the Employers Forum for Reducing Reoffending is a really good example. The employers that sit around that table, we are all competitors out in the retail market. When we're in the room looking at reducing reoffending, it's almost non-compete. So we share ideas and we even share great CVs. We share prisons that we've been in. And we find that by connecting with each other, we amplify our voices louder. We have more impact and we do more good. So I think by reading about other businesses and seeing what they're doing probably helps drive ideas within our business, but we can also connect more as well.
And that's why I love business in the community, because we get opportunities to have podcasts like this or attend events, or, you know, I've had the privilege to host many panel discussions where, again, it's not about competition. It's about learning from the best, sharing best practice. And that's where the magic happens. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that. And just on that note, Business in the Community has so much information on their website for members and non, especially around recruitment and social mobility. They have their Inspire, Hire and Grow employment framework there that you might like to check out too, just to get a few ideas on how to do things better. Now, last question, and I ask this of all the Lens guests, as responsible leaders, what are you, Jess and Roisin, personally committed to doing more of or less of in the coming year? And it's a good time to ask that question. Jess.
I think for me, it's probably spending maybe a bit less time on social mobility and behind the screen, and more time like out meeting colleagues, doing more of that volunteering like we spoke about, and connecting with other businesses to share best practice and insights.
And Roisin?
I've committed that I am going to make sure that I attend at least one Seeing is Believing visit this year, but on a topic that I know nothing about. So back to this point about opening your eyes to something that, you know, in your world isn't a big issue. Because I do think, you know, if I think about our Fresh Start scheme came about because of Seeing is Believing visit, our breakfast clubs came about because of a Seeing is Believing visit. But neither of those issues were obvious to us before we went along to that visit. So I've committed to going to one this year that I know nothing about the topic that's been discussed.
Tell you, that is where the learning happens. Well, I just want to say thank you so much to both of you for that fascinating and inspirational discussion, focusing on community and how businesses can truly be a force for good in the places in which they're located and further afield. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for listening too, and we'll be back with another episode very soon. You've been listening to The Lens with me, Sarah Travers, And don't forget, if your business would like help with engaging more actively and effectively with the communities in which you're based, then please do visit www.bitc.org.uk. Take care and tune in next time.